Hello there, and welcome to episode 36 of Shifting Perspectives. This week, I'm joined by Nikisha Watson. Nikisha Watson is a Trinidadian-born actuary, author, and blogger living in the UK with her husband, her three children, and their dog. I was initially drawn to Nikisha after watching a few of her viral videos that had me in absolute stitches. In addition to the truth and raw honesty that of her videos and her blogs, I absolutely love her desire to embrace cultural diversity around children and that she has tied this into children's literature. Enjoy. Welcome, Nikisha.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Okay. So firstly, let me give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is that drives you.
So I'm Trinidadian born, and I live in the UK with my kids, as you mentioned. I always had this, as growing up as a child, I always had this background of storytelling and humor. My dad is my personality is a lot like his. I always like performing. I used to perform calypso competitions when I was little. So I always had this way that I like to make people engage with people. And I like to make people laugh. I like to talk. I'm quite chatty. I always get in trouble at school for talking too much. And I guess what drives me is, when it comes to my blog, is that side of things, just being true to myself and being open and honest with other people. I like to interact with people on that level. In terms of anything, other aspects of my life, a lot of what drives me is that I want my children to have the values that I grew up with, but I'm raising them in a different culture. So it's a big challenge. And I try all these different ways to just get them engaged, get them to be confident and know about who they are. And yeah, so that's a lot about my personality. Other side of that, as you said, I'm an actuary by profession, which is quite mathematical, but I also write books, which is nothing mathematical at all.
So all, yes.
Two sides of my personality comes out there as well. I'm driven by my passions. So I have a passion about, my books are based a lot about my childhood and my country that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite passionate about that. So I'm driven a lot by that. And then when it comes to my work, I love maths. So I'm a geek. And
okay.
That drives me as well. I just like the idea of using mathematics to have a job and have a career. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy that. For most people, it sounds very dull and boring, but
but it's you.
I quite
love
enjoy
it.
Yeah, so just generally what drives me is passion. I have to enjoy what I do. If I get bored, I lose momentum, and I can't give something to myself that I don't feel some sort of passion about.
Okay. So. And you have three children, right? How old are your children?
My eldest is 14. And then he's a boy, and then I have another son who's 6, and then a baby who's 2, a girl.
So they keep you busy, I'm sure. And keep it interesting.
So I always tell people, I always have the three worst ages. So I have the grumpy teenager who's entering his examination year. So he's like full on, always studying, and you have to monitor him and make sure, because you want him to do well in his exams. And then you have the middle one, who's just typical middle child, always wanting attention, can't get it,
yes.
No status. He's, I have the eldest who's a boy, the youngest is a girl, and he's just in the middle, always like me, 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 me. So it's like he's full on. And then a toddler. So need I say more about toddlers? So
Yes. Oh, I get it. Oh, do I ever get it? Okay. So as you mentioned, you're originally from Trinidad. How did you end up living in the UK? And how did the two worlds, how do they compare for you?
So I came to the UK to do my degree, my undergrad degree, back in 2002. So I've been here for a long time.
Okay.
And I, the intention was to leave after I graduated, but then I just fell in love with England at the time. I thought there was more job opportunities for me because my job is so specific and niche. We do have actuaries in Trinidad and actuarial firms, but there are so much more to choose from in London. So mm-hmm. I thought I'll just stick it out for a little bit and then go back home when I got some experience. And then I got pregnant with my eldest, and then I thought of uprooting him. And then one thing happened, one thing after the next happened, and you just end up creating a life here. And I was married before. Mm-hmm. And I got divorced, and I moved back to Trinidad when I got divorced with my son. Mm-hmm. And we stayed there for 3 years. And in that 3 year period, so I don't know how much you know about actuaries, but you have to write 14 exams to qualify.
Oh, tell me, because I really don't know very much about actuaries. And I feel like the listeners could use this knowledge too. So explain it to us. Mm-hmm.
So an actuary is someone who the official definition is actually someone who tries to use mathematical models to try to predict the future of finance.
Okay.
So our job is we look at finance in a long-term way. So any kind of long-term financial commitments you have, so say like insurance. So you buy a life insurance policy now, but it's not going to pay you until you die, hopefully in a long, 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 long time from now. Mm-hmm. But the insurance company needs to know right now, today, how much money you have to pay them to make sure they could pay out this money and not make a loss when you eventually need to make a claim. Mm-hmm. So that's, mm-hmm. you need to know, try to predict what might happen in the future with investment markets, etc. Mm-hmm. And we use past data trends, etc. to create these sort of fancy projection models to determine what that cost is. So that's an example. So that's what actuaries do. So it's quite academic and quite a difficult job. So to make sure that you are good enough to be able to do this, you have to write 14 exams.
Oh, wow. That's not a little bit of exams. Yeah.
So when you graduate from uni and you decide you want to be an actuary, you go and work for an actuarial firm, when they put you on a program where they usually pay for you to do these exams. So you work and you start gaining experience as an actuary, which is what I had done. But to actually qualify, you have to finish these exams. When I moved to Trinidad, I was still doing my exams. And because I was going through a divorce and I had a young child, and I was back home and there was friends and
home
alcohol and carnival and I'm young and I met my ex-husband when I was 15 and I got divorced when I was 23, so I'd spent most of my young years being stuck with him. I'm just trying to find a better word, but
that's so the word you need, right?
Sort of went like freedom sort of. So I had no time to think about studying, and I lost 3 years of my actuarial life at that time. And then during that 3 year period, I met my current husband. He came to Trinidad on a holiday and ended up with a Trini wife, which he always said, all he wanted was a holiday, and look what happened.
Look what happened. He got a Trini wife, eh? Yeah. That's a good deal. That's a good deal. Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yes.
So in that 3 year period, when I got divorced and I lost a bit of my madness that I was going through, I started to think about my career again. And I thought, I've lost these 3 years. There's this university in the UK that offers a program, a master's program, that it's a 1 year program and it exempts you from a whole bunch of these of the exams. Mm-hmm. So it would help me speed up get me back on track to my where I would have been if I didn't lose these 3 years. So I decided I wanted to do that. So I ended up moving back to the UK. By this time, my son was 5. He started school. And after that year, when I said to him, okay, we're going back to Trinidad, he was like, no way. I don't want to go back.
Oh,
he had
new
friends by that time. He was properly established as an English boy. He liked it here. And my husband was is English. And by this time, my first husband was Trinidadian. But this time I was married to an Englishman, and he was now home as well. And he was like, well, I'm home, so it's up to you. Mm-hmm. And so I just put my son's needs before mine, as you do when you're a mom. And that's how I ended up staying here.
Okay.
Plus, I had a bit of an incentive because my divorce from my first husband was quite messy, and it was quite nice being in a different country to him. Mm-hmm. And so it didn't take much convincing for me to be like, okay, yeah, let's stay.
And I imagine that you still, well, maybe pre-pandemic, you still made it home quite often, right?
Yeah. So we tended to go back to Trinidad once a year, usually for Christmas. Mm-hmm. The last time I went to Trinidad, I went twice in a short space. I went for Christmas and then for Carnival, which are only a few weeks apart. Mm-hmm. I was so happy that I almost didn't do it because it's really expensive. And around Carnival time, my kids are in school, so it meant I would have had to leave them and go on my own, which is great, but you always have this guilt about it.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
So I almost didn't do it, but I did. I ended up doing it because my This Is Real Mama. So I have my blog is called This Is Real Mama. My followers on there who live in Trinidad really wanted to meet me, and I thought it was a good Carnival time. It was a good time to do it. Of course, you don't need much of an excuse to go to Trinidad for Carnival.
Anyway. Well, I was just about to say, you're a Carnival lover, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So last time, I went Christmas, and then straight after I came back here for like 6 weeks and went back again. And I'm so happy I did it because straight after that was lockdown.
Yes.
And so if I had missed that Carnival, that would have been, you know,
completely just too long.
Yeah. So I'm really happy I did that. And my dream 1 year is to be able to go for Christmas and just stay straight through to Carnival. But now one of the good things that comes out of this whole COVID thing is that remote working is like a thing now. So yes. I could probably potentially do that, and just because I could work from anywhere at the moment. So we'll see.
Yeah, certainly. Now, how do you think it compares in terms of raising kids in Trinidad versus raising kids in the UK? Do you think there's much of a difference? Or?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So in Trinidad, if you're from Trinidad and you have your family there, you have so much more support. Our culture is more family-centric, I think, than British culture is. So, for instance, most kids, they have parents who work and grandparents who are retired, and the grandparents look after them while the parents are at work. So they always have this, they're raised with more of a idea of family, I think. At least that is how my family is like. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my friends as well. And like over here, childcare and things over here are so expensive.
Yeah.
And it's because there's such a big demand for it. Whereas in Trinidad, it's not as expensive because most people don't necessarily need to utilize.
They have somebody in their family. If it's not a grandparent, it's an auntie or a cousin or somebody they can go to.
Yeah, even a neighbor. That's another thing.
Neighbor.
Neighbors.
Yeah.
Okay, you don't know your neighbor.
You smile and wave. That's it. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing I find that lockdown particular has taught me is that finding things to do with children in a warm climate like Trinidad is just so much easier.
Yes.
So we have to be so creative. And if you don't have money as well, it's even more difficult. Whereas in a tropical island, You have a lot more freedom. Mm-hmm. And you could do so many things for free. Go to the beach, spend a whole day there, and the kids learn a lot from doing that as well, through play and meeting other kids, and you know, and it's just, to me, it's just nicer.
I totally hold that butt. Don't forget what you're going to say. But doing lockdown here in Turks and Caicos versus if I was still in Canada, one of the things that I'm extremely grateful for is the weather we have year round.
Our ability
to be outside. So, you know, this past Sunday, the kids and I were at the beach for hours and hours, and it was just like we spent the day. I'm sorry, you know, but I had a conscious moment and a prayer of gratitude to like, okay, if we were in Canada right now, we'd be in the house. And where are we going? And especially as even though there's so many winter activities, when things are shut down and you have to make your own fun and you have to find activities. I get it. So I cut you off. You were at but.
Well, before I say the but, so I totally get that because I was, first lockdown obviously was the beginning of the year, and it started in the spring and ran into the summer, so we had lovely weather. So I can, even within England, you compare it to the different seasons, I felt that first lockdown was less challenging, because even in winter all the activities are indoor, and of course all the indoor places are shut, so then you have, there's only so many times I could take my kids for a walk in the woods. So we live in the countryside, so there are lots of woods, and it's beautiful. England is absolutely stunning, the scenery, but it's freaking freezing.
I've
sort of started to embrace the cold a bit, but my boys are okay with it. But my daughter, she is what in Trinidad we say, a cat born in an oven is not a bread. She's been born here, but there's absolutely nothing English about the child.
She's Trinidadian.
She hates the cold. She doesn't like to wear clothes. She loves soca music. She's just wild and free. She doesn't like to wear shoes. She's chatty and loud and full of personality. And she hates the cold. We go outside, she will cry the whole time. She wants me to lift her up, and she will stick her hands in my jacket, and she will scream if it slips a little bit and a little bit of her hand gets exposed. It's just not, we can't do outdoor activities as a family in the cold. Just doesn't work for us. So it's just home a lot. We're lucky. We live in a house that has a nice sized garden, and have a children's play. I've turned it into like a park. It has a big play area in it and a trampoline and all this. But they get bored after a while of even that. So I look at photos of my nieces and nephews in Trinidad going hiking, and I'm just like, oh. So then I get to my butt. But there are things about England that is amazing for kids, especially my eldest. So my eldest has never been what society will call a typical boy. So he's never been into football or anything like that. He's always liked what girls will usually like. So he's always been like dolls and dance and gymnastics and because styling hair is one thing he loved, painting my nails, he always liked that sort of stuff. We used to go on dates together to the salon, which normally mums do with their daughters, but I do it with my son. In Trinidad culture, or Caribbean culture generally, is quite so much against
it.
Gender stereotypes are on steroids in the Caribbean.
That's a good way of putting it, definitely. on steroids. I would agree with you.
So one thing, especially when it comes to him, I'm so grateful we're here. He fits in so much better into this culture. I worry, you know, if we're in Trinidad, he would have probably had to hide a lot of his personality to prevent himself from getting bullied, or he would have been sort of, it would have been forced upon him, this machoism of Caribbean men, that
sort of thing. He should be. Yeah.
Yeah. And he is just not, that's just not, he's just not like that at all. Mm-hmm. So I always look at him and I think, okay, we'd made the best decision. This is the, because England is so liberal and embrace all this that, you know, doesn't matter. You know, he used to do tap dance. His tap dance class was full of boys. He wasn't the only one, you know. I buy him dolls. All my English friends know he liked dolls. They buy him for his birthday, for Christmas. They would never be like, why are you buying him dolls? Which is what the kind of questions I will get from my Trinidadian friends. Like, you should, why are you encouraging him to do that? You
know,
that
yes. Sort of. Yeah.
So, but then there are other aspects of it as well. So there's a lot there in terms of opportunity. So my eldest son is very academic, which would have made him very suitable to life in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. But my middle son, although he's quite bright, he learns very differently. He's not academic. He's very visual. He needs a lot of stimulation in different ways. An English education system caters a lot for different ways that different kids learn.
Learners. Yeah.
Trinidadian. The education system of Trinidad, and I think a lot of the Caribbean is the same, it's very, very academic focused. Mm-hmm. And if you're not academic and thrive in that sort of environment, you will struggle a lot. Mm-hmm. And so for him, I always think, okay, although I still think his personality, he would prefer growing up in Trinidad because he's just wild and free and loves all the outdoors and but I think he would have struggled with how competitive and difficult our system is in that sense. Mm-hmm. So there are aspects of it that I think maybe, and then Trinidad at the moment is very, very crime riddled. It's very sad. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my friends who live there say, oh, you say all these things about the freedom and all this going to beach, but we're quite scared when we go. We're scared about getting robbed. Once it gets dark at 6, we're locked in the house. We don't let the kids out. It's not like what it was like when I was little.
Yeah, the freedom element isn't the same anymore. Yeah.
So I think there's that aspect of it. Like, I go running in the evening with my son. And in winter, I mean, it gets dark by 3:30 in England. And I usually go running by around 5. And he loves to come with me, the middle one. Mm-hmm. And I like to take him because he's just so full of energy. If I don't get him out of the house and make him burn off that energy, it's trouble for me. It's just not worth it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my friend said to me, in Trinidad, you cannot do that. One woman on her own with a little boy running in the dark. No way. Yeah. So you would end up, so there are freedoms as well that I would have lost that I don't ever feel, I don't ever even think about. I do think about safety, but not in that sense where it's like a thing.
You don't have to have a hyper awareness of it in the same way.
Yeah.
No, I can understand that. Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I do feel I am lucky and I do feel grateful. Like, my friends who stay in Trinidad, when I complain about England and say I'm fed up of it, I want to be warm, they say, yeah, but we looking to leave because, you know, my aunt got robbed the other day, and everybody knows someone who's been a victim of serious crime, you know, not just petty things, serious things. And so it's really upsetting and really sad. It's one of the reasons that despite how much I love and miss Trinidad, I won't move back because I don't think it's something I could get used to because I'm so used to just not having to worry about that here. Mm-hmm. So
You
can't have everything.
You know, you've talked a fair bit about your kids, and I totally understand the personality and the fits and the different environments. Now I'm a mom of 3 kids as well, and one of the things that I really admire about you is the honesty in your journey, quite frankly, and the humorous way. But where did that come from? Like, how did you get started with the blogging and the videos, and how did that come to be?
I remember when I was pregnant with my first. So as a first-time mom, you tend to do a lot of things like research about parenting and pregnancy. And we didn't have Facebook in those days yet, so social media wasn't a thing, or at least I wasn't on Facebook yet. This was 2006, so Facebook was probably in its
early. It was probably just becoming a thing.
Yeah. And so I bought these books. And one of the things I read in this book was about breastfeeding and all the benefits of it, which I would never argue are not true. But then there was the emotional side of it where it said, you know, it's this natural thing and it's the best way to bond and it's this wonderful experience. Then I gave birth and I breastfed him and it was absolutely awful. I just
thought, like, the first child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was painful. He didn't stop. I was feeding him all day, all night. It was awful.
Yeah.
I did not enjoy it. I did not get any of those feelings that book told me I would get.
The warm and fuzzies weren't there, right?
But there was nobody to tell me that that was a lie. I was feeling was normal and what that book was saying was just a pack of lies.
Yes.
And I cried every day. I was upset. I thought, what's wrong with me? It was just awful that you're ready. A first-time mom, you're vulnerable, you have no idea what you're doing. I was in England away from my own mom. Mm-hmm. So my mom came to England when my son was 8 weeks old. So I had to help me out because I was losing my mind because I was thinking these books were going to tell me what to expect. And of course they didn't. Mm-hmm. And so when I had my second, I was a lot more, I knew exactly what to expect. It was a lot more easy, but by that time we had social media, and then I inevitably get bombarded with all these mommy blogs or people talking about their showing their you photos of what it's like to be a mom, and it was
perfection, right?
Yeah. And I just thought by this time I knew that was rubbish. Mm-hmm. But this is all you were seeing, and I thought, you know what, I am going to start. So I first started just on my own private social media, writing my status about things my son was doing that were completely real, but moms would never want you to know. And me saying, come and get this child, because I don't want to be his mother. He's driving me nuts. Mm-hmm. Usually you say that and people are like, oh my God. But you damn well know other moms are
thinking they're feeling that way. Yes.
And it started with him. And when I started doing it on my own thing, my friends who are on my Facebook friends were saying to me, oh my God, you need to write a blog. My friend is having such a hard time. She has this kid and she's thinking something's wrong with her because she's having such a hard time. And all her friends who have kids are posting all these wonderful images of motherhood on there. And so I got encouraged and encouraged. And then it wasn't until I got pregnant with my third and I was on maternity leave. And I thought, you know what? I have nothing to do. I'm on mat leave. I'm a bit bored. Let me just start this blog. And I was determined that it was going to be the blog that I wish I saw when I had my first.
Yes.
And so that's why I just try to make it as raw and as real as I can, because I know it would have helped me if I saw something like that. I would not have cried so much when I had my first, thinking I was a complete failure as a mom. And I just think it's important, you know, it's sad. I think that the people who understand the most about what a mother goes through are other mothers. Yeah. But those are the people who are the first to make you feel the worst about.
Isn't that, you know, it's so sad when I see that, you know, because I feel like you could be lifting somebody, you could be helping somebody in that space of you're not alone in this. I got you. Yeah, I've been there. I've done that. I get it. And just be in that space with somebody. So it does bring me to the fact that there must have been gains from you putting out this blog and the videos that you do. What kind of reactions have you been getting to them over the years? What kind of gains and from these, you know, relationships that I'm sure have developed?
Yeah, so I have quite a nice little, I don't like to call them followers, I call them my Facebook family or my two family. This is Real Mama could be shortened to the words TIRM. So a lot of people started following me because of this video of me dancing in my kitchen.
Which I recently saw, which was fabulous. Yes.
So they didn't actually realize, they thought my blog was just me doing all these dancing videos. But that was really just a one-off. My husband taped me because I do that all the time. I'm always having a little party in my kitchen. When every time I'm doing something that's a task that is mundane, like cleaning or cooking. And so most people thought that's what it was about, that they will see more of that. And then, so I used to get a bit worried that people would start following me and then I don't post another video for months and months and they get a bit like, what the hell is this? She's not doing another video. Mm-hmm. But it didn't work out that way because I ended up getting a lot of women in particular messaging me saying, oh, I only joined you because I saw that video and then I started reading your blogs and, oh my God, it's amazing. I have kids of my own. Or some of them don't even have kids, but they have sisters who have kids, friends who have kids, or they have grandchildren rather than their children are all grown up. And they still enjoy it because they like being able to say to their friends or their sisters or whoever, or their kids who are now parents.
You know,
mm-hmm. You don't enjoy breastfeeding? Yeah, it's normal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You've not lost your baby weight after 2 years? Yeah, it's normal.
Yeah, definitely.
That's another thing that really stick in me. And these moms, they're 2 minutes after they give birth and they're nine months out and they have abs and stuff. And you're just like, oh, where are the moms like me who like 9 years? Yes. Still
like, I needed your blog. Yes. Indeed.
So, yeah, so we formed this little sort of support. It turned out to be this little support group because it even helps me. So a lot of people read my blog and think I have it all together and I have learned so much and I'm this sort of, you know, nothing phases me and because I could write about these things so easily. But that's not true. I write about them because I want people to come to me and say, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And even though now that I've had my third child and I've heard it so many times, people say, yeah, me too, still makes such a big difference when I say, because yeah. If we take now, for instance, I'm homeschooling and I just can't cope.
It's insane, eh?
Bonkers. So like, I've been running for the last, I always used to run a lot and then I stopped for years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've started back recently. And a lot of people who know me, who know I hate the cold and I hate running more than the cold, and now I'm running in the cold.
They're like,
how you get motivated to do that? And I just say, have you ever homeschooled my child?
I can so relate. And, you know, I used to be into running and I stopped somewhere through the children. And in the pandemic, guess what I started doing again? I started running, you know? It is a lifeline, I tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Ever homeschool my son, Ethan, you would love to run. You would run in snow. I've been running in rain, snow. I don't care because I just need to run, literally run away from my children.
Yes.
It's just, I look forward to it. It's like I've never... Like even in the past, before I had all these kids and I used to run religiously, it was always a torture, but I used to do it because I knew it was good for me and I was living in Trinidad at the moment and you have to have a beach body all year round, mm-hmm. and carnival, you have to wear bikinis on the streets. So you always had this pressure.
And motivation to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, now I never stopped exercising, but I wasn't running. I was doing, which to me, I always say that's the best form of exercise and it's free as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And but I just, you know, I just suddenly have this drive, like I look forward to it. I never felt like that before, and I don't care to admit that. It's just I need to get away from the house. I need to get out and have an hour to myself. Because, you know, they read all these things about, oh, have a bath. And have a bath?
Do you get knock, 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 knock. Yes.
These people who are saying self-care, have a bath, they don't have children.
Not the ages we have anyways. Yeah, yeah.
You can't have a bath and the whole time is, I want a car. I was like, why do you think? why is it enjoyable to have a bath with mommy? I do not, when all mommy is telling you is, I do not want you here. Why is that nice for somebody to be telling you, go away? But it's, you know, so it is what it is. So yeah, I've been running for 2 weeks now because we've been in lockdown for 2 weeks. And yeah, it's, I encourage anyone, find some way, don't feel guilty, but finding whatever way to just have that, you know, real time alone to yourself, because it really energizes me. When I come back from that run, I no longer feel to scream at everyone in the house. We could do a peaceful bedtime where I'm, you know, we're reading stories and it's lovely and peaceful. That's how I cope with it, mainly.
So, you know, you clearly, you're raising the kids in the UK. You've shared how important it is for you to also share your love of Trinidad with them. You know, tell me about, tell us about AB culture and how that has helped you share your love of Trinidad with them.
So I always did things like I'll cook Trini food, I'll play Trini music. I speak to my children in my dialect and they understand it and they know when they hear it even more strong.
They know what time it is.
Yes. So they know all those little Triniisms about me and they absolutely love Trinidad. I try to visit as often as I can. They talk to my, their Trinidadian relatives on Skype anymore. It's FaceTime. They're close to their cousins, although they don't see them often, and they know everything there is to know about Trinidad in that sense. But I love to read, and I always encourage my children to read. So I always made reading as part of bedtime routine, and in my own way of wanting to continue this, like, pounding this idea of identity, their Trinidadian identity into their heads, I used to make up stories for them at bedtime that were always based about around Trinidad, using my own childhood memories and turn it into a story. And then one evening, when my eldest son, he was a little bit older now, but still taking part in bedtime stories, he was like, oh, can you just start writing this down? Because sometimes you take so long to think about the story. So I thought, okay, I'll write it down.
That's practical, and, right?
So I used the alphabet as my little guide because it just made it easier to give me something to just to help me think of what to think of next. So I thought, okay, A, what begins with A about Trinidad? And I write something down. And then I ended up having this book, A to Z, of all these different things you could do in Trinidad, turned into a story. And it was my eldest who said, you know, that book's quite good. You should give it to Auntie. So my sisters who have children should give it to Auntie Tally. Because my sister lives, I have two sisters, but one of them lives in the States. So there he related to her because she obviously has kids who are not Trinidadian. So it's like them. So he thought she would enjoy reading it to her kids. So I showed it to her and a few of my other friends who are in my sort of position, who are Trinidadian but raising their kids either in the States or in England. And they, all of them said to me, you really need to publish this. Mm-hmm. It's so good. It's like any Trini mom or even Caribbean mom or even non-Trini moms who just want to make sure their kids have this world view about different cultures. They would just really like, this is nothing like this on the market. You need to publish it. So I thought, well, okay. So, and so that's how it was born. So I published the first one. It's called Alphabet Adventure in Trinidad and Tobago. And then I was such a big hit. People started to say, oh, wait, you have to keep writing. I did Counting Adventure, which is same sort of theme but using numbers instead of letters, and I've written a third one, another Trinidad based one that's called Let's Celebrate in Trinidad and Tobago. So Trinidad and Tobago, we have more public holidays than any country in the world. So okay. We have 21 public holidays, and that does not include Carnival.
Okay.
Carnival officially isn't a public holiday.
Really? But, okay. Yeah, but it's made a holiday.
Yeah. No one's expecting you to come to work on Carnival. It's, people would accept being fired if they asked to come to
work.
Nowhere's open. Everyone's in on the street. So, so I think the Karakum limit is 21. So they didn't make Carnival officially a bank of a public holiday. Mm-hmm. With the only understanding that it is technically. Yeah. So I wrote this book that's every single one of our holidays have to do with some aspect of our culture or a religion that we are celebrating. So we have this thing in our national anthem, every creed and race finds an equal place. So we have a holiday for Eid, Diwali, Christmas. A lot of, because we used to be a British colony, a lot of our holidays are Christian related. We have a holiday for Shelter Baptist Day, Emancipation Day, Labor Day. And so it's quite interesting if you look at our holidays and why we celebrate them and what they're about. It tells you quite a bit about who we are and our culture. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the third book is based on that. I've taken each one of these holidays and I've just sort of made a little story about them. And then I wrote a fourth one that's a personal sort of childhood story of just, it's about a little boy who he lives in England. So again, it's always based on my own life. So he lives in England and they had a power cut and he's fuming because his iPad is not working. And he's saying to his mom, "I'm so bored. There's nothing to do. I'm so bored." So his mommy was like, "Bored?" She said, "You know, when I was growing up in Trinidad, we had power cuts all the time. And this is what we used to do." And it goes on to talk about all the things we did as kids, you know, playing in rivers and climbing trees and picking fruits, or, you know, like going to the beach. So I said to him, "You know, you can't get bored. You just need to find something to do." So that's what it's about.
Okay.
So the moral of the story is, you don't need an iPad to have fun, but I can't help but just throw in the Trinidadian side of it as well.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, you know, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. Is there anything that you'd like to say before we close up?
What do I say? I don't know. Just thank you for having me. It's been fun. I hope you enjoyed getting to know me a bit better. Yeah. I hope your listeners enjoy this little podcast and check out my website and my books if that's the kind of thing you're interested in. I have a book called Rainbow Like Me that really talks about diversity in kids. It's nothing to do with Trinidad. It's just about teaching kids about the colors of the rainbow, but using characters from a wide spectrum of color and culture. So it's introducing babies and toddlers to the idea of colors, but also the idea of the beauty of the skin color rainbow
And the diversity.
It was a passion project I did with my son, who actually illustrated the pictures. That's another aspect of my brand that I really am passionate about, this idea of having Black and brown children represented in literature, which is something we're really proud to be part of that movement to make that more of a thing.
And that's so important. You know, I'm a big children's literature fan, especially from, you know, not just the educational perspective of being an educator, but for my kids and in our home and them being able to see themselves and others, like a wide range of spectrum of what the world is. And I think that it's great to be a part of that and to reinforce that and have your children be part of that process with you. very meaningful. Yeah, it's just... So awesome. All right. Well, thank you for joining us this week on this week's episode of Shifting Perspectives. I'll have all the links up so that you can find Nikisha and everything she's up to in her books and her blog and all that on the episode page. So you can visit www.yolandrobinson.com/episode36. Have an awesome week.